Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Any number of golf majors have produced any number of golf stories of major interest. If the stories generated by the playoff between Tiger Woods and Rocco Mediate at last year's U.S. Open are not the best of those stories, they are, as the saying goes, among them. The exceptionally prolific John Feinstein took advantage of that circumstance to partner up with Rocco Mediate and create a new book, Are You Kidding Me? The story of Rocco Mediate's extraordinary battle with Tiger Woods at the U.S. Open. When I had the opportunity to speak with John this week, I began by asking him whether the book was Mediate's idea.
It was, sort of. He was approached by a number of publishers and writers and agents right after the Open saying, you've got to tell this story, how you stood up to Tiger. You were the first guy not to melt in his presence in a pressure situation. And people love you because of the way you handle the whole thing. And this is a book. And Rocco was intrigued by the idea, but he said he read a proposal one writer sent him in which during the playoff on Monday, the guy had him talking to God. And Rocco said, I don't talk to God. And I said, well, he might have seen you talking to Tiger and gotten confused. A lot of people make that mistake. But he said he wanted to do the book with someone he knew. And I've known Rocco since I did A Good Walk Spoiled back in 1994. He's best friends with Lee Jansen, a college teammate who won the Open in 93. And so Lee was in A Good Walk Spoiled. And we have had a long relationship, and I thought it would be a lot of fun, knew it would be a lot of fun. So when he asked me, I said, sure, why not?
The popular perception of the playoff between Rocco Mediate and Tiger Woods was that the greatest golfer of all time would brush off this career journeyman best known for his gift of gab and his cranky back. But Mediate had won millions of dollars on the PGA Tour, a couple of years where he made more than $2 million a year. He was no slouch, right?
No. The notion that Rocco was tin cup is a lot overrated. In fact, before he hurt his back in 1993, he'd been consistently ranked in the top 20 in the world. He'd won five times. He won five times on the PGA Tour. He even beat Tiger after he came back from his back surgery head-to-head in a tournament in Phoenix. So he had experience with it. And a lot of people wonder just how good a player Rocco would have been if he had not had back miseries literally for 14 years, from 93 when he first heard it until 2007 when he met Cindy Hilfman and she found a way to keep him up and running without the back going out on him again. So you're right, he was a very solid player. However, going into that Open, because he had struggled in 2008, he was ranked 158th in the world and had to go through a playoff in the qualifier just to participate in the Open. So to say he was an underdog is certainly not an exaggeration.
And yet, when he went into that playoff, he was convinced that he was competitive, that in fact he might very well beat Tiger Woods. What led him to conclude that?
Probably insanity more than anything, Bill. But as I said, the one time he'd gone head-to-head with Tiger with a tournament at stake in 1999 in Phoenix, he'd won. So he had that experience. He also, his friends who he grew up with in Greensburg like to tell stories about Rocco getting into impossible situations and saying, this is no problem, and then somehow getting out of them. And this was one of those deals where when Tiger made the putt on Sunday at 18 to create the playoff, Rocco obviously was disappointed. He wanted to be the U.S. Open champion, but his attitude was, look, I've always dreamed about winning a U.S. Open. I've always dreamed about going head-to-head against the best player in the world with the whole world watching me. This is my chance. Why shouldn't I look at it as an opportunity rather than as a burden? And I think because he took that approach, even when he got three shots behind on Monday after 10 holes, he still was standing there saying, I can do this. Why not? And that's why he actually took the lead going to the 18th tee.
For listeners who may not be entirely familiar with how the U.S. Open differs from virtually every other golf tournament, when things are tied at the end of regulation, they go to an 18-hole playoff. So tell us a little bit about how this all unspooled.
Well, the Open is, in fact, the only one of the major championships that has an 18-hole playoff on Monday. Everyone else decides it through some form of either sudden death or a three- or four-hole playoff on Sunday evening when there's a tie. The Open is anachronistic. They insist on the 18-hole playoff, which is usually, usually anticlimactic. The players are tired, the fans are tired, and the play usually isn't very good. This playoff was the exception, maybe because Rocco and Tiger are so comfortable with one another. They've known each other for years. They both played great golf throughout, and it produced one of the most dramatic finishes ever. The only bad news about it, Bill, is that it now gives the USGA an excuse to keep having the 18-hole playoff for another 20 years.
And, of course, this time around, it was a 19-hole playoff because even after 18, they needed one more.
Well, I asked David Fay, the executive director of the USGA, who says, well, sudden death is unfair because you can decide the winner on a fluke shot. I said, what's the difference between sudden death after 90 holes and 72 holes? I'm still waiting for the answer.
Do you think Rocco Mediate was surprised when the playoff ended as it did with Tiger Woods once again holding the championship trophy?
I don't think he was surprised. I know he was disappointed. I know he believed he had a chance to win until that last putt on the sudden-death playoff hole went wide left, and he knew he had lost. Interestingly, Bill, I don't think it really hit him that he lost until months later. He was riding this wave of euphoria because, as he said, people acted as if he'd won. They would come up to him and say, that was incredible. I've never seen anything like that, the way you stood in and the way you made those three straight birdies on the back nine on Monday. And he said sometimes he had to look at people and say, thanks, I'm very proud of the way I played. But Tiger did win. And I think it was only maybe 6 months down the line that he looked up and said, gosh, you know, that might have been my only chance to win a major championship. And then it really did hit him.
When you talk about the attention that followed the tournament, it's easy to imagine that another golfer might have been thoroughly distracted and his game totally thrown off. But Rocco Mediate really seems to be a guy who enjoyed making the rounds of, you know, Letterman and the late night shows and all the rest of it very much.
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting point because, like you, I've spent a fair amount of time with public figures in my life. And frequently when you're in a restaurant or you're out in public with them and people come up and they want an autograph or to take a picture or, you know, just to talk, to tell them where they were when something happened, guys will tolerate it. And, you know, the person will walk away and they'll roll their eyes and say, okay, that was the 47th time today. Rocco treated every single person who came up to him as if they were the first ones ever. And I think he really reveled in it. He liked meeting new people. He liked the attention. He liked the conversation. He just has that kind of Lee Trevino personality that everybody he meets is a new friend.
Well, you mentioned his personality, and certainly there is much that's attractive about Rocco Mediate. On the other hand, at the same time that he was on the brink of entering the brightest spotlight that he had ever experienced, his marriage was ending. You and he acknowledged that on the rare occasions when he was home with his wife and children, he was getting drunk and playing video poker 8 hours a day. I wonder, was he reluctant to have you include that business in the book?
Well, I would say yes and no. The yes part is he was reluctant for all the reasons you would be reluctant about something like that. The no part is that part of his life was a few years behind, the part where he'd been drinking really to mask the pain from his back injury that kept coming back, yet playing too much video poker, his marriage crumbling for all the reasons that marriages crumble in situations like that. So he had a little bit of separation from it. I think if it had been ongoing in 08, it might have been more difficult. But that was a period in 04 and 05 that he was struggling with the back, struggling with the drinking, struggling with the marriage, with the online poker. So he had a little bit of space from it and was better able to talk about it as a result.
Rocco Mediate had had a bad back, of course, for years. When he turned the problem over to a physical therapist named Cindy Hilfman, whom you've mentioned, with whom he eventually became involved. I'm sure that you've heard about how women in labor always fall in love with the anesthesiologist, John. Was there some of that going on in the Mediate-Hilfman relationship?
Probably. And you know, as I said in the book, Rocco is someone who no one is ever a good guy. You're either the greatest or the worst. This wine is the best or the worst. You must order this meal because it's the greatest thing ever cooked, or don't touch that because it will kill you. And when Rocco met Cindy, and Cindy was able to find a way to help him with his back, and Cindy is a sweet, nice person in addition to all that, I think he fell in love like that, the way people fall in love with their doctors or their teachers or whomever it might be. And he was searching for something. His marriage had already been in difficulty prior to meeting Cindy. And so I think, you know, it was one of those things where the sun and the moon aligned and it all happened very quickly and it became very intense, and it is very intense. And Cindy is now battling her own terrible health problem with this kidney disease that she's had for years. That's put her in and out of the hospital constantly for the last year. So in many ways, the last 12 months of Rocco's life have been, to quote Rocco, the greatest and the worst all at once.
It may seem a trivial question at this point, but how is his golf game these days?
You know, it's been a struggle, partly because of all of what's been going on with Cindy. He spent a lot of time sitting in hospital rooms with her, staying up at night in the middle of tournaments when she's had to go to the hospital. He hasn't finished higher than 18th in a tournament this year. The one thing I will say is going back to Bethpage, I think, gave him a breath of new energy because all the fans were there reminding him about what happened at Torrey Pines last year. It's his kind of golf course, and I know he's hoping that as the summer goes along and they're playing the major championships that he can find that magic again.
John, at one point in your conversations with Rocco Mediate, he told you that although his children enjoyed sports, none of them seemed to be nearly as obsessed with any game as Mediate himself had been with golf when he was younger, and he said that's probably a good thing. Did that surprise you?
Not really. I think I found in a lot of athletes that they don't want their children to follow in their footsteps. For one thing, if you've been successful, there's a lot of pressure on the next one. I mean, Gary Nicklaus was a very good golfer who made it to the PGA Tour, but he could never possibly come close to matching his dad. And I think Rocco understood that his obsession, while it gave him a very successful career, often made his life tough, made it difficult for him when the back problems happened to even face up to the possibility of not playing golf for a living. And I think he's very happy that his three boys are all good students. They're all pretty athletic, but none of them are obsessed with any of the games that they play.
John, as a guy who has followed the PGA for a good long while, are you already trying to imagine how this year's Open can produce a storyline that's as much fun as last year's was?
Well, I doubt if you're going to have anything with a personality like Rocco. He is unique, the most overused word in sports, unique, but he is, in fact, one of a kind.
At least you didn't say really unique.
Or very unique, as every radio host I know except for you says all the time. But people have asked me going into the Open, well, what kind of story would it be if Phil Mickelson were to win? Weeks after learning that his wife, Amy, has to have surgery for breast cancer. And I said, well, there wouldn't be a book then. I'd get skipped and they'd go straight to Hollywood with that story. There are always storylines out there in golf. And the thing that's great about it, Bill, is we never know when they're going to happen. No one, with the possible exception of Rocco, thought for 1 second that he was going to contend in last year's Open, that he was going to be the guy going head-to-head with Tiger. And yet there he was with the stock market literally coming to a semi-halt. This is before it crashed on Monday in the playoff, going head-to-head with arguably the greatest player of all time. As I said in the introduction, it was the matchup no one could have imagined. The greatest player of all time versus the greatest player in the history of Greensburg, Pennsylvania.
John Feinstein is the author of Are You Kidding Me? And he joined me from WLIU in Southampton, New York. John, thanks very much for speaking with me.
Bill, thanks as always.
My conversation with John Feinstein will be featured in this week's program, during which we will also update the progress of this year's U.S. Open at Bethpage Black on Long Island. We'll also have a story about one especially intriguing golf hole on another golf course altogether. I'll also be talking with ESPN's Tim Kirkjian about various developments in baseball, including this week's news that Sammy Sosa was among the ballplayers who tested positive for steroids. And in honor of Father's Day, we'll explore the stories of some proud fathers who played Major League Baseball and may soon see their sons do the same. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.